Okay, hello and welcome to the Create Don't Hate podcast. This week we have Team Singapore rugby player Jay Heikel. We'll catch up with him and find out what the hell he's up to after the break. Mr. Jay Heikel, you there?
Yes, sir.
Right, maybe you want to introduce yourself to the folks out there.
All right. My name is Jay Heikel, 27 this year. What am I currently doing? I'm taking my degree now at SIMRMIT in business marketing, but I've, of course, dabbled in a few other jobs now and kind of narrowing down. Yeah. Played the national team, played rugby for a few club sites. Yeah, I mean, where do we want to start?
Okay, maybe let's talk about your rugby stuff, right? Right. Talk us through the your journey into playing rugby, how you started playing rugby.
I think just like how some of your other previous people that you had on and similar to you. So my family, actually my dad's side had a very big like a history or heritage in St. Andrews. So back then when the primary school was at Francis Thomas Drive, my granddad was a leaf cutter in St. Andrews. So then my dad and my uncles all live in the boarding house. So that's why me and my brothers and my cousins all go to St. Andrews. So that's when I kind of started playing rugby.
Yeah, for so long, all these things I don't know.
you never asked me this.
Okay.
But none of my uncles or my brothers or my cousins or my dad all play rugby. They all play either like hockey, football, so all the other sports except rugby lah.
Okay.
Yeah. So then I think similar to you in primary two, my PE teacher was Mr. Jim Tong. And then back then it just rugby was part of the curriculum, I think. And from there, had a few PE lessons where he gave us the ball, you know, those one-on-one drills. Yeah. And yeah, I started picking rugby up from there. I think I remember the one drill that we did was a one-on-one drill. And I just told myself, I think that time was primary two, you're like, what, 7 or 8 years old, right? And then just like, okay, if I run one side and then I choose to change direction at the last minute, maybe I can beat him. So kind of like a sidestep. So and then I think at that point in time, I felt in love, a little bit more in love with the game, and I think it just picked up from there.
I think everyone that starts rugby usually gets that thrill, right?
Yeah,
I think the opponent, and then you're running away from him. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So you started in primary two, primary three. Maybe can you just fast forward through your rugby playing journey? School and after that?
Yeah, so from primary school, I got my first, when we go to, you know, when we go from primary six to sec one. So back then, my batch was the first batch to have DSA, direct school admission. So that time I got quite a few requests. But now, and then of course, I just chose St. Andrews, went straight into that. And from there, I never looked back. So played Sec 1, Sec 2 in St. Andrews, C Division.
Yeah.
And then I think from there, actually, I didn't play B Division. I actually played football in Sec 3, Sec 4, and Sec 5. So yeah, got a few DSA, but I chose St. Andrews. And I think people don't believe me. Actually, RI, ICSI gave me some DSA slips. Rugby, of course. But back then, my batch was the first batch to get DSA. So they pretty much DSA like the whole junior school team from St. Andrews into St. Andrews. But I think at that point in time, as long as you were a St. Andrews boy, you put St. Andrews as your first choice, you would definitely go St. Andrews.
Correct. So you don't need the DSA one. Yeah. So, okay.
So yeah. You mentioned you played so by the time, didn't know.
Yeah. You mentioned you played in C Division.
Yeah. So I played. So that 2 years was really hardcore because I think everyone knew that team. Like we had like I don't know how many coaches. I think like 13 or 14 coaches, and it was like a very big. Like it was nice because It was the new school. There was a new pitch and all those stuff. So,
yeah, la.
Yeah.
Totally different from my time, la.
At that point in time, yeah, it was a very, very big team. Yes.
I've seen the photos. So. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I think you see the photos. The there's some photos circulating around.
The team photos / coaches team photos. Yeah, so you played in Sec 1, Sec 2 in the national school games, right? The national school championships. Or what it rugby is called, the GKS Shield.
Yeah, so we played in the CDF. Both years made the final, and unfortunately both years didn't win the final. I think in the Sec 2 C Division final, that one was a good story because I was never a kicker, and then at the point in time I wanted to kick, so I only kicked in the final. And I scored it. I just want to put it out there. There's some people saying that I missed. But I want to say that the guy who missed, his name is Teng Chong Yao. He looks nothing like me. Please, somebody need to call the journalist who wrote that.
Come say that you and
but anyway, your body
can tell.
And then very similar sometimes from the back. But anyway, I think everyone who played C Division or like played any sport in secondary school, it was too much for me. Like the moment we ended C Division, the final, I remember, I think we took a 2 weeks break, and then after that they said to come back and do like B Division pre-season.
Yeah.
That's how it is, I was right? A bit. It is. It was a bit intense for me.
No, the calendar, like I mentioned one of the podcasts I was talking to, don't know who. I think I was talking to DM. So the school sports calendar is like that, lah. You finish your C Division as a Sec 2 player in August, right? August, September or whatever, and then you straight away before exams, you get a bit of time to join in with the BDF, and then you break for a few weeks for exams, and then you're straight in again with the BDF. And because B Division, the Sec 3s and Sec 4s, the under 17s, they play in February. So there's a short runway for you to catch up. So it takes its toll. Yeah.
And
okay,
what happened after that? Yeah, so I remember going, we were playing some school in for the preseason, and I remember. Oh, I can tell any story, lah. No holds barred, lah.
No holds barred.
So then the coaches, I remember we just were like recovering from the loss because I think we lost by 2 points. And I know that year we trained really hard, and then the boys were like, you know, you had that camaraderie, and like everyone knew each other. And like we built towards that, and then the final, I remember 1 week before the final, we were all like staying together in school. At night, we were talking to each other, training till nighttime, doing those kind of trust games and just building each other up. And then in the final, we lost, and like we couldn't stop crying. We couldn't face our friends. Nobody know what to say to each other. At that point in time, there was not much leaders as a 13 or 14-year-old. And then you get thrown into that, and then they just automatically tell you, okay, you got 2 weeks of rest, 2-3 weeks of rest, and then you go and play B Division. You go and start your preseason because the season starts in February or March. So at that point in time, I felt like there was not much. What's the right word? There was not much empathy as a young kid. I wasn't asking for that, but I just felt like it could have been a bit easier. So then I walked down, and I stayed in Tampines. So to go to school every time is like, you know, you stay in Pasir Ris, right? So
I think there's no closure, or there's no like reflection and no you don't allow the players to kind of grasp what is happening or what has happened after all the effort they've put in. Because of the demands of the calendar. So it's very tough. So what happened in Sec 3 and Sec 4?
So I remember it was the first preseason game, and then me and my friends were just like going towards to the game. It was a friendly game in St. Andrews. So it was supposed to meet at like 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning. And then I stayed quite far. So no excuse, I was late. But at that point in time, I was like taking a toll on me, like mentally, like the some of the coaches, the way they talk at us. And like, you know, I mean, some of the guys can just, you know, at that point in time, you just take it and go. Just keep taking in and go. But at that point in time, I felt like, you know, it was a bit too much for me. Why should I be enduring all of this when I can see some of my friends out there playing at Swiss soccer courts, enjoying their time during the holiday? Because I just finished Sec 2 exams and then all of this, and then suddenly I'm not even in Sec 3, but I'm already training. So I thought I was a bit like tired and pissed. So I went there in the room and, you know, came in with a few of my friends, just came in, we were late. We said, we're sorry, sat down, and one of the coaches, you know, said things like, you all think you're superstars, you know, CDF was a small kid, now you're going to the big boys, it's the B division, you know, it's time for you to step up. You know, if you think you're too good for the team or you're too big for the team, the door is just there, the team doesn't need you, you just walk out. And at that point in time, I was just a bit like, it's a Saturday morning, some of the boys just finished the CD final 3 weeks ago, and then coming in here and then getting to face this from one of the many coaches, you know, and you don't feel that sense of like empathy or support. So I told them, I said, if they really push me, I was telling my friends, they push me again, then I'm just going to leave. And then that's what I did. So I took my bag and I left and I never looked back. I think everyone was surprised that I did that. I think I was the only one who did that. I'm not proud of it or whatever, but, you know, I just knew that I didn't want to be treated like that. I didn't want to feel that way. I'm not saying that everyone was treated that way, but yeah, so for the whole of my B division, I did not play any rugby at all. So Sec 3, Sec 4, Sec 5. So I did Sec 5. I didn't play rugby at all. But what I did play was football. So I was playing. So I had managed to get more time. So then I actually went to try out. So I play a lot of, like, you know, below the block football, like FIFA Street, that kind of. So I was, I had a lot of friends who were in, like, you know, that time, point in time, they have, what we call it, the clubs, the Singapore clubs, you know, they have all the age group teams.
Yeah.
So I went for one of the trials in Tanjung, in Tampines Rovers. Yes, the Tampines Rovers under 16, they had a trial. So I just went there, I tried. I was never a skillful footballer, but I was a rugby player, right? So I had power, speed, I just whacked the ball. I was a striker, so yeah, I played there for 1 year. It was a good experience. And then some of the football coaches in my school knew that I played. So I played there while I was in Sec 5 in St. Andrews as well. And then I graduated. And then I went to Republic Poly to do my diploma. So from there, they had I get to meet some other people that I've never met in a long time, you know, from different schools that I played with rugby against. So then I had to pick a CCA or pick a sport to join, or IG at that point in time, interest group. So I went to join and try out in the football team. And this was the point where I knew that I had no chance in the football team, because
in RP, you tried out for football first.
Yeah, I went for the football trials first. Yeah, so I went there, and there was the coach there. His name was Rafi Ali. He was like a legend. I think some of the older people know him.
Yeah.
I didn't know much about footballers back then. So he came to the trial, and there was like, I think like 50 or more people there. It's crazy. And the moment he came, he was like asking everyone, segregating, you know, it's like, okay, if you play for the current national men's team of football, you stand one side. And then it's like, if you play for any club side, you stand here. If you play for age group, you stand here. You play for school team, you stand here. Those who never play anything at all, you stand all the way on the right. You stand with me. So I was like, alamak. I see the chain. I said, this one no chance lah. This one can make two teams already. So I didn't even try. Like, I didn't even bother, because I knew that I had no chance against these people who have been playing for years. You know, like how some of our friends who play rugby since primary school to secondary school, these are the people who've been playing from then, and then they come to poly. So I knew that the caliber was just too much. I was far from it. So that's when I kind of reconnected with some of my so-called rivals and people that I play against in secondary school. One notable name is Mr. Mara Ishraf and a few others. And then I think that point in time, some of the seniors were like Daryl Chia and Iqbal was there. So yeah, I went for rugby trial, loved it, got into it. That point in time, the coach was, what's his name? Harry something.
Harry.
Mason. Yes, Harry Mason, correct. So at the point in time, I didn't know him or didn't know much.
He led you to some polite championship.
Yes,
right?
Yes, he did. So yeah, so okay. That team was a special team. So the year before us, they won the first ever polite for RP. So we were coming in as champions.
And back then, Republic Poly was quite new, right?
It was. It was easy to get into a course back then. Some of the courses, I think, was like 28, 27 points. Can go in O level.
Don't tell people.
Oh, okay, sorry. Now, at that point in time, but I did not get 27 points on my O level, by the way. I just want everyone to know. But anyway.
We can't verify.
But
hey, okay. So yeah, we talked about your journey all the way until Republic Poly. That would be what, 18, 19 years old, right?
Yes.
Okay, let me rewind you a bit. Back to your B division time where you, after the walkout, and you know, I'm sure you found joy in continuing sport and finding time and being able to play with your friends to pursue something that you actually have a bit of skill in, which is football. But did you like look back on what could have been? Because I think the rugby boys confirmed they would have continued training hard, and I think they won one of the years, right?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. There were many times, actually, the last few years where I actually look back and be like, if I hadn't missed those 3 years, what kind of a different player would I have been? How much, what would I could have accomplished and achieved? And yeah, they won that 1 year on the Padang, which was amazing. I was so proud of them. That was actually, that was the last year that I was in school when I was in Sec 5. So there were many times where I thought to myself, if I look in the mirror, I was like, if I could go back and rewind back time, I would have done things a little bit differently. But at the same time, that I felt that, I wouldn't be the person I am today if I didn't have walked out as well. So it's a mixed bag. It's a mixed bag, definitely.
Yeah. That's the thing about hindsight, lah. It's easy to talk about it from the future standpoint, but at that point in time, you made the decision that you made because of the things that you felt and because of the situation.
Yeah.
And I don't think, like you said, you were 14 years old at the time. So, whatever it is, you moved on and you definitely learned and made the most out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't easy. I mean, that point in time, when you because I had a DSA and some of the coaches were not a big fan of me because I felt like I betrayed the team, and I walked out of them. I was only thinking about myself, me, and not thinking about the team. Not thinking about my friends and all that. And, there was a big part of me has always felt a bit guilty and but I always felt like it was the right decision for me deep down to have done that. Because, at the point in time, I was still a kid and I just wanted to enjoy spending a little bit more time with my friends doing some other stuff,
Yeah. In a way, you have to get it out of the system, right? Yeah. So that you can mature and move on and... that's the reality.
That is truly
okay.
It.
Now, So when did you realize that you wanted to take rugby seriously? Like you wanted to, I can go somewhere with this. I might as well I train a bit harder and shift my priorities a bit. When did you realize?
That? I think the point in time was when I was 20 years old. As a 19 or 20, it was my second year in Poly, and I think Inoki Afiaki was our technical director. And he was doing a lot of youth stuff. And that was when I think five or seven of us from RP was called up to be in the seventh team, in the under 20 seventh team. So at that point in time, I didn't play much in the national team because I was not involved in rugby. The only national team I played was when I was in Primary 6, but that was a long time ago. So it was very new, and I felt when I went for my first tournament, I remember it was the under 20 JB Sevens. So there was a few notable characters there. There was a really good team. And it was my first time playing in the national team. We did not have a very good outing for the first tournament. It was not like, you know, in secondary school or when you were in Singapore where you were winning almost every game, but you meet teams from other countries and it was very foreign to me. But I enjoyed it, you know, especially sevens tournament. You ask anyone who doesn't love traveling for a sevens tournament, right? So, yeah, at that point in time, and then, you know, the coaches and some of the technical directors like Inoki and all that say, you know, this is the gateway. You know, you start here, you want to end up in the national team. There's more tournaments for you to go. And, you know, from here, you can, like, you know, propel and, you know, just push yourself, see how far you can go. So, yeah, I think when I was in year two and I started playing and training in the national team, that's when I took a bit, like, I spent more time on rugby and really invested. And, like, you know, I was like, I'm 3 years behind everyone. And this is where I got to step up and make it count.
That was also the time where I met you, like, officially, like, you joined the men's team for training.
Yes, you were my first roommate.
We will talk a bit about that. Yeah, so talk us through that experience, like finishing your under 27s and then coming down to Yio Chu Kang to join the men's sevens team. What was it like for you and the
I can tell you honestly, training at Yio Chu Kang that point in time before the field became unplayable like how it is today. Going down there week in, week out with those like with you boys and like training at that point in time was one of the most enjoyable time playing rugby and training in my life. Because of course at that point in time I was young, there were like, you know, there were older players who could lead us, but then at the same time there was someone in the middle and, you know, I was the youngest one there. And it was nice because at that point in time I felt like I had, you know, like a champion, no injuries, no, you know, you can get whacked in for tackling the whole training and then the next day you recover and everyone was pushing each other. It was just a very nice atmosphere to be in. I was new and raw, but I felt like I belonged somewhere and everyone was like just taking care of each other. You know, you see everyone, like some of the guys rushing in from work in their suits and like then, you know, they like come out and they still give 100% and those guys from school coming down together a little bit earlier, you know. It was nice. It was one of the few times I actually felt like I looked forward to training. I didn't dread it, even though there was fitness and all those kind of stuff. It was fun. It was just one of those teams that was really, really fun to be in.
You're just talking about DM, right? Rushing from work. And
I think that time it was only him. And a few other, I think. Who is that? Yeah. You know, Butler was there.
I agree with you, man. Like, traveling all the way down. I mean, when I was in NTU as well, to come down all the way to Yio Chu Kang, you know that was like home base of the national team. You sweat and you bleed there. You play your trial games there. You did your fitness there. And then after that, you go for a good meal nearby. Yeah, those were good times.
It was a very nice process to have. It was like, even though you had a very long day, you knew that you go training, it's going to be hard, but it was going to be enjoyable. You're going to walk out of here and feel like, just felt like a champion.
Yeah. Now, in your many years of playing rugby, I talk like you are 35 years old, but in your many years of playing rugby, were there any significant challenges that you had to overcome?
I think the number one thing was when I had that injury or this illness that I had.
Yeah.
It was after, when was it? After SEC, right? Yeah. After the SEC sevens, and I had this rare medical condition. It's called DVT, so deep vein thrombosis. So naturally, this is rare because usually old people have it sitting down on a plane very long in their legs, right? And mine was in the upper limb, so it was in the top part of my body.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, don't need to go too much details into what it is, but it was a tough part in my life because it wasn't about rugby already after that. It was like physical health. I was in ICU for 11 days. my lung collapsed on one side, and you know, there was a lot of things that I was going through for the first time in my life. You know, being from a felt like I was in the national team that time. We were in the men's team. I think I was in there for 2-3 years, and I was playing the best rugby I ever played in my life, according to me. I felt very fit. I was lifting heavy in the gym. I was running, you know, and stuff like that. And from being able to do all of that, and then suddenly, you know, doctor coming up to you say that, you know, you might not be able to play rugby ever again, or you might be lucky if you can even walk. And I felt like it was, and my whole world came like crumbling down. But you know, it just like all things that I've gone through, I always just try to find the positive in it. You know, I'm still alive, you know, those kind of stuff. I can do something about it. I can still see my family and stuff. I think that's what kind of got me going. But it was a tough part in my life because I felt like I was at the highest high. I felt like I've been the fittest and the best I ever been. And then, you know, just like that, I was like torn down.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, from there, slowly recovered from it. And, you know, met a lot of physios, the team physios, you know, the national team physios, and everyone slowly helping me with the doctors. And I guess for me, I was really lucky because the surgery I had, it was more like, you know, they're removing something rather than fixing something.
Yeah.
So I think the doctors were surprised, but I healed really fast, healed really well. And then from there, yeah, I mean, slowly got back into the game. Of course, that was when I missed out the SEA Games. That was the first SEA Games, right? If I'm not wrong.
15.
That's the one in Singapore.
Yeah,
so that would have been my first SEA Games. But yeah, that was I was training hard for it. So I was just graduated from poly, and then they told me to defer my NS, and I did that. And then we were in the process. That was like the best time. And then, yeah, this happened. So that was really that kind of changed me a lot and made me like a really, really strong person after that.
These challenges or obstacles always seem to happen when we are at our peak, right?
I think you also know this very well, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, but I mean, I mean, we were teammates then, and I watched everything unfold. And like you said, you were in peak condition, and to visit you in Changi Hospital to see the condition you were in, it was really an eye opener as well. But the best thing was, of course, to see you back on the field after that, lah. And
yeah,
continue talking shit about you on the field. The best thing, lah, to see you and to continue playing with you. I think at that point in time, the 2015 SEA Games. Basically, this is a water boy chat now. We were the water boys for the 2015.
We were the professional hydration specialists.
Yeah. So carry on with, take us through the process from then. Like, you recovered, you started to get back to rugby, and you know, people were saying you should stop, and the SEA Games had just gone. What were you looking forward to, or what were you trying to achieve next?
I think the number one thing was just try to get to that peak again. And I know that it was going to be hard because I was not able to do anything physical for a while. I couldn't even jog, you know, because they were so afraid, because they were unsure of this condition, like whether I'd be okay. I myself felt okay. But of course, to the doctors, you know, they're just trying to be on the, you know, a bit more cautious and stuff. So what was that? 2015 August, right, was the SEA Games.
Yeah.
And then the next one would have been 2017,
yeah,
if I'm not wrong. Yeah, so that would be in KL.
Yeah.
So that was my next goal, because from there I'll be like, okay, that's the long term goal, that's a 2-year goal. What's the short term goal? What's the process? So for me, it's slowly getting back onto the field, slowly trying to lift in the gym again, slowly trying to run and all that. And I did get that, and you know, slowly work my way up to that. And again, I guess another challenge was when the NS finally caught me after evading them for so long. I think I was quite old when I got into NS. I think people was wondering why, whether I was in NS, whether I signed on, but I didn't. It's just that they was trying hard to find me. But so I entered NS when I was 20, what was that, 25, I think, 25 or 24. Yeah, so then, yeah, before that, I was just training hard. There was all the normal sevens tournament that we go to, right? We go back again. Then me trying to be that peak again, trying to work my way up to that again. And yeah, then, of course, when SEA Games 27 came around, there were certain requirements and, you know, things that needed to be done. But as a soldier, I was past E9, L9 because of my injury.
Yeah.
And for me to play in the SEA Games, for some reason, I had to be past A1, L1 or clear certified fit.
Mm.
Okay. So for those who don't know, then I would basically have to go through BMT, and I didn't. I was a clerk, so I went through Kranji Camp 3, KC 3. I was a professional clerk. And then, so I was doing that. I was doing 8 to 5, and for me to get out of camp to train, I would need to have some kind of cert. But then if I go and train, then they will ask me, you pass E9, L9, how can you be training? You should be, you know, not doing anything. You shouldn't even be lifting in the gym and stuff like that. So there was a lot of technical stuff that really annoyed me, and it was really hard to get around because I think, you know, right, say like how the army stuff, it takes so long to be processed, especially when it comes to health stuff.
Yeah.
So the national team needed a certification from my unit, and my unit needed to see from my doctor whether I was certified cleared, and that whole process took too long. So by then, that was my other challenge that I faced for my next SEA Games that I missed, which was in 2017. Yeah, so basically, I couldn't get into the 2017 team because I couldn't be cleared to play it, and I couldn't be cleared to do a lot of things, and they were not going to insure me for insurance and stuff like that. I think the national team is big on that. Especially when you play rugby, you need to have this form of insurance and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, that was the next lead up for me that I really struggled with because it was so annoying. I was physically fit, but I was not physically fit by the army, and I was not physically fit by anyone else's term or the doctor's term. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the frustration? Because these were, I mean, it probably looked or seemed like administrative issues, right? Whereas physically and spiritually, you just wanted to, you know, go and train. But all this paperwork and red tape was holding you back.
Yeah, I mean, we were training again together like old times, but I think that point in time, 2017, we were training more at CCAB, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was back to that routine. You know, I love that routine so much. You know, going training hard, running at the track, making jokes and stuff. And I've been like training with you guys like proper 100% for like few months or something like that, or I don't know how long. And then leading up to the 2017 SEA Games, you know, I think as most national athletes know, you have to start sending in names so that you can be, you know, start getting your jacket sorted and stuff, right? But yeah, they could never put my name in fully because I was never cleared by Sports SG and, you know, the national team and all this, the MI unit. And it was just so much that was going on. So,
yeah.
So in the end, I couldn't even do anything about it already. By the time if I could, it would be too late. So I did round two of being the supportive teammate, professional hydration specialist. But now I upgraded. I just became another tackle pet on the field for them.
Upgrade. Yeah, so okay. So after 2017, you finished NS and all that. What happened after that? Like, you're still playing, so.
Yeah, so the SEA Games passed in KL 2017, and then after that there was a new plan. Of course, the next plan would be 2019. Where was that? 2019 SEA Games? Philippines.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So that one, I was, of course, naturally, I was in NS and I had gone through, somehow I went through BMT and, you know, I got certified, but that didn't matter. So I started studying, taking my degree when I graduated. So I was, of course, the next goal is 2019 SEA Games. Where was that? In Manila, I think. Or no, can't remember where it was.
Manila.
But that would have been in... art club, in dodgy areas. Which part of the year was that? In the early part of the year? Can't remember.
I can't remember.
But anyway, I was working my way, working my way up to it. And then I think it was the tournament, like the one in Singapore, the one in Queenstown Stadium, that one where we played.
C7s, was it?
Not the C7s, it's the one below the Asian Sevens. The development ranking, I don't know.
The qualifier for the Asian Rugby Seven Series.
Correct. So at that point in time, the trophy in the hometown. So that point in time, I felt like I was getting my peak back. I was running at the track 3 times a week for about 2 months, dropping my 3-click score, my 2.4 score. And I remember so vividly, it was the fastest I ever ran my 2.4 and the fastest I ever ran my 3-click. I was lifting heavy. I felt like a champion again. And I felt like I got that peak again, because now I can actually see that from my timing, for my runs, we did the 6 a.m. gym sessions again, and I was lifting heavy again relative to my body weight, And then I think my body just couldn't take it anymore again. So the week, let's say the tournament was on a Saturday. So on the Wednesday night, when I fell asleep, I felt like a pain in my left knee, but I thought it was just normal, like any sore pain. Next day on Thursday, I woke up to go to school. My legs, I couldn't even bend it. And I was, nervous. I was afraid. I was like, what the hell is happening? I don't know what's happening now. What is it now? And my knee swelled up throughout the day while I was in school. Because I think I was sitting down too long and stuff. So that happened. I immediately phoned Reggie and texted him. Reggie is our legendary physio. He's a good man.
Good man.
Shout out to Reggie, Physio Solutions.
Reginald.
And then,
Reginald.
And so Friday he started seeing me and he started giving me he did whatever he could, and he didn't know what was happening to me, and we all couldn't figure out what was happening. So basically the whole tournament, if you could see pictures from there, I was limping and I was playing with a swollen knee. I wasn't 100% at all. And then I think that time the coach was Brakey, John Brakey. And I think leading up to that, he was like, I couldn't even answer him. I don't even know what to say during the tournament. Like even before the match started, I was really injured. I don't even know how to explain. And then eventually it's because, the next few months after the tournament, and of course, we didn't win the tournament. And I think I dropped the ball at the last play in the final. It was the most horrible moment, in my life. One of the most, actually. In the home crowd, all there, I was on the wing, I was limping, and my knee was strapped. And I don't know if I scored the try, it would have made a difference, but that, it just made it worse, I felt. But so then started after that tournament, just started going to the doctor, started to see what happened, started physio. So basically, the diagnosis is I have an ulcer under my left kneecap. And it's just cartilage wear and tear. I think this is normal for all our rugby players, right?
Yeah.
So the injury just chose to came up at that point in time. So basically, I went from 0 to 100 really quick, and my body couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't gradually work my way up to it. So basically, that was it. And like weeks and months of just going 100% took a toll on my knee.
Yeah.
And so what happened after that? That was 20. Can't remember if that was 2018
or early 2019.
Early 2019. So the SEA Games was coming up, and that was a lead up to the SEA Games. So I started doing my rehab. Things were going through my mind. What's happening? What's the plan? To me, was what can I do? Is there a possibility for me to make the team? What can I do to make my knee better and all that? So. Yeah, I did started going to SSI almost every other day, just doing rehab stuff, boring stuff, just do what I need to do. I think I went there 2 or 3 times a week for like months, and yeah, just leading up to the SEA Games. The thing was that I was training like 100% all the way through. And then even with my knee, there were times where my knee was like, one day felt like a champion, the next day felt like toilet. So I was like getting some of these, like, you know, painkillers and like things that would make my knee swell down and all those stuff. So I was like basically always walking with a limp everywhere I go. But during training, once I warm up, I just went on with it.
For those who don't know the impact of a cartilage injury, because I have a, like Jay, I have a similar issue, or had a similar issue. So the problem with these cartilage injuries is that you can't really sort it out, or there's no point where it says, okay, it's gone. It's not like a ligament or a broken bone or a torn ligament, right? It's not like when it's off, it's off. But like Jay was saying, there are days where you wake up, it's, hey, my knee is fine. Okay, I'm running around. And then the next day, it's like, oh my gosh, I have no power, I have no strength, every step is painful. And then it goes up and down like that, right?
It is. It's a roller coaster of a ride of emotions. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
And then, like what you said, I think the thing is that there's no like cure, or there's no like long-term where it would just go away. You just learn to manage it. And that was one of the saddest things I heard. I was like, you know, when you have like a shoulder pain, or like, you know, you could just feel like you could just go surgery and it'd be cured. But now they're telling you, you know, you just got to learn to manage your body. I just felt a bit, I always felt like if there's a problem, it can be solved, and then it will be, the problem will be gone. But this problem is solved one day, then next week it will come back again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, after all these setbacks, after the numerous challenges that you had to go through, you're still playing.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Why?
Oh, I just can't seem to get away from it. The thrill from running away from people, tackling people. I think going to training, you know, like I said, just so much banter, so much love, and so much fun. So much, you know, like, that I love that rugby is not just the physical sport itself, but outside of that, you know, going for dinners, trying to train together and push each other during training. I just love it so much that I cannot just stop just because I cannot play in a major tournament anymore. So I started playing in the club rugby more, started training, you know, coaching kids rugby and stuff like that. So that's why I felt like I knew that I really, really loved the game. Like, you know, like I said, those years at Yio Chu Kang really was rooted in me that I would never ever trade that for anything else, because that made me really love rugby and hold on to it for a long time.
Yeah. There's just something about the game. Right? I went for one of the Saints training sessions on Saturday at Queenstown
Stadium. Oh, yeah.
It was just after the downpour. It was just a 1 hour session because of the COVID restrictions and when we couldn't do a lot of things. But just to stay in a group of five, chuck the ball around, run through the drills, do a bit of fitness, put on your boots and to do all that, right? it really made a difference. I left the stadium smiling to myself and wondering, wow, shit, this is why I love the game. Like you said, there's just something about it.
And I feel like you will definitely get that, even though the older you get, you will still feel that sense of fulfillment.
Yeah, yeah. And there are so many ways to still be involved in rugby.
For sure.
Right? Or, I mean, sport at any level. You can coach, you can give back, not just spectate, or not just, you know, be a keyboard warrior. There are many out there.
There's a few notorious ones. We've spoken
a lot about your challenges and defining moments and things like that. So in your sporting journey, whether it's rugby or whatever, what is the most memorable moment for you?
Oh, wow.
If you had to pick one.
To pick one. I can't pick a whole experience, right? I think it was when I had my first, not my first, we went, it was our first Hong Kong tournament. It was my first Hong Kong tournament, 7 series. And so this was before my injury, I think. Yeah, so this was when we played the Hong Kong Football Club, the turf, and we were living in the hotel and all that stuff. So it was a proper sevens tournament. It was a nice little start. But I think that what was my fondest one was because I always remember this, and I don't think you'll get to see footage of it because it was blocked, but I can confirm that it happened. It was a Malaysia game, and I think we were playing for 5th and 6th place, if I'm not wrong, or 7th and 8th place. It was like the final. And it was one. It was when Malaysia still had some Fijians in the team. And at that point in time, I was still quite cautious and wary of Fijians, you know, because they're Fijians, right? So in that game, was I felt it was my best game I ever played. And I will always remember that game because it was a close match. And if I'm not wrong, yeah, I scored one try where, you know, I was in the middle and I stepped a couple of guys and I burned through the middle and I scored the try under the post. And towards the end of the game, you know, it was a back and forth game. It was Malaysia and Singapore, you know, that hype up. And it was like the final, the team, you know, that win stayed on top and stuff like that. So it was a very strong team, and our team was really strong as well. And it was a good game. It was a close match. And I remember I was somehow on the wing, and one of the Fijians was on the wing. It was one of their big Fijians. I kid you not, it was huge. And it was the last play of the game. So basically, if he dropped the ball or I push him out, and we would have won. Yeah, so it was one of those times where if I could make or break my name in as a proper rugby player in Singapore. So I knew that I just didn't want to be known as a guy who could score and was fast, but I could defend as well to be an overall, you know, player. So he was running on the outside. I knew he was a big guess. So I just went low, drive him out, and yeah, tackle him really as hard as I could, push him out of the game, and we won. The whole team came running to me, and I think we won by 2 points. And that was the first time in a long time we beat Malaysia. So that was my fondest time. I think it's just because it was Malaysia. We were all locals. And at that point in time, I felt that I wasn't afraid to play against Fijians anymore. So yeah, that was a big part of that. I think that ending itself was a sweet ending in that tournament.
Yeah. All these sevens tournaments, you know, when we used to play in the Asian rugby series, yeah, every little tournament was like a mini World Cup.
Always.
And it was, like you said, like the entire experience, the 4 days that we spent together is really awesome.
It's havoc. At the end, it's havoc.
Arriving at the airport, flight, the bus trip, training, tournament time, being jacked by the coaches, the doctors.
It's a solid whole experience. If I could sell it as an experience, as a holiday, I also don't know how. You know, when you go for retreats to Switzerland to go for skiing, it's a whole thing. But this seventh tournament is you have to do from start to finish. You really get to enjoy it.
Okay. Now, you are 27 this year?
Yes.
Okay. What goals do you have left to achieve, whether it's on the rugby field or outside of the rugby field?
Inside the rugby field is definitely to get a SEA Games medal and a gold one if I can. I know now with like COVID and everything that's going on, the chances of having SEA Games is low even more because the next few SEA Games is being held at countries that don't have rugby. So that is even more of a challenge. So by then, the next SEA Games, I will be 29. Like even above 30. I don't even know. But to me...
You have until 31.
Until 31, okay. What is that? 4 years.
Yeah.
Before my body expires on the 7th circuit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think you used, I can't remember what was the word you used. So as a national rugby player, I feel in Singapore, the highest accolade you can achieve is a SEA Games medal. Because you would have played the highest level. You know, no disrespect to AFIN and you know the 15th scene. You know, you play against Japan and like Hong Kong and all that, but you know, SEA Games is like
It's true. It's all about context. I was talking to Sham the other day in the previous episodes. So he was talking about you know how some of the other sports athletes like the swimmers and all that, you know, to them SEA Games is just a training ground and they bagging gold medals here and there, and their real target is like the Asian Games and the Olympics. For guys like Sham, who was a track star, I mean, back then he was limited to his SEA Games, right? He had opportunity, of course, but with other factors. And for rugby, definitely, you know, SEA Games to medal. And of course, the experience would be anything bigger, like Asian Games. I think sometime back, the boys had a team in the Youth Commonwealth Games. These are all huge experiences because you get to play against really, really world-class teams. Yeah.
I mean, I listened to that podcast. It was a very good one. And I agree. As a rugby player, just because of how the culture and the scene of rugby is in Singapore, to go in SEA Games and to win it as a rugby player, it would be the highest accolade like you could get. Of course, if one day we manage to go to Asian Games, which I don't think is far away from that, and we managed to somehow, let's say, one day conquer that or the Asian 7 series, you know, which is pretty similar context. But for us now, and knowing where we stand as a rugby nation, as 7s, I think SEA Games to conquer that mountain is one that I want to. And I know, if I'm not wrong, Sydney, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's no national, there's no rugby team that has won the gold medal SEA Games yet, right? Yeah. Yep.
Silver was
I think that was in KL. Yeah, so I want to be in that team because I got people like who have played rugby with and we all came into the national team together and they really got 3 SEA Games medal. Or 2.
It's all about timing.
So for me, timing. You know, in a way they got bronze and silver and you know, what's that one, bronze again. If I have that one goal, it will mean so much more to me than, you know, it will be a nice ending to whatever rugby career I had. But yeah, that is my on-field goal. Outside the field, of course, now I'm coaching a lot of kids rugby for SEC Academy. I try to give back in terms of charity and, you know, help kids at schools with whatever I can, giving talks and whatever. But I would love to be part of a big coaching team for the national team if I could one day be part of the management and see what it feels like to run a 7s team or a 15 team, you know. And that would be just, I think ultimately like what you said, you know, it doesn't have to be big, you know, but just give back to rugby whatever way I can, be in schools, be in like, you know,
it's important.
I think to me, rugby has given me so much, and for me to just go to a school and teach, maybe I would have changed one kid's life.
Exactly.
That's enough.
Yeah. Okay. We have spoken a lot of good stuff, a lot of valuable information and some really great stories from Jay. Now, last thing before we go off, any words of advice to the younger folks out there, whether it's pursuing rugby, whether it's pursuing any other sport, whether it's life in general?
Okay, this question asked a lot. I think it's as cliche as it comes for me with all the different setbacks I had. I always try to find, you know, if you can do something about it, work towards it. You know, I think the number one thing is always be positive. You know, everything happens for a reason. You know, I try not to use all the cliche lines, but to all the young kids out there, I feel like if I could tell you one thing, and if you have a chance to play sport, in any level, you know, just give 100% and have fun, because you never know when will be your last day. You never know when the doctor might come up to you and say you can't play this sport anymore, because it can happen. You know, like I say, one day I was feeling like a champion, feeling like I was the best player in Singapore, you know, feeling like I could do this, I could do that, you know, and then you're so high and mighty one day, and you know, everything can just come tumbling down and just humble you just like that within minutes. So whatever you do, you know, as cliche as it sounds again, you know, take it as like the last time you're going to play rugby, you know, your football or cricket, you know, whatever you do in life, give 100%, have fun, and always have that positive mindset with you throughout, because, you know, like, sport gives and teaches you so many things, especially rugby, so you never know, man.
All right, man. Awesome stuff, Jay. Yeah, thank you. Some nuggets of wisdom. Thank you for sharing your life experiences, your stories, and the significant challenges that you had to overcome. I'm sure, like I said before, and I'll say it again, as long as one person benefits from this episode, we have done our job, Mr. J.
Yes.
So yeah, thank you. Thank you for taking your time out of your busy schedule to do this. I'm sure people benefit, and I hope all of you listening out there will find this enjoyable and meaningful. That's it for us. We'll see you next week. Ciao.